Welcome, everyone, to another fantastic episode of Couch Potato Theater here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast on the Phantom Podcast Network dedicated to covering all those hidden gems, cult classics, and guilty pleasures that are just so good, even though you may have that Criterion Collection or Deluxe Blu-ray set in your library just mere inches away from your entertainment center. You love what you are watching so much, you don't even care about getting off that couch. And that, my friends, is the definition of what our show is all about. As always, I am Davis Grayson, your host of Couch Potato Theater. And for this show, I have none other than the two founders of the Phantom Podcast Network. Please welcome my guest hosts, Kyle Wagner and Kevin Reitzel. Gentlemen, how are y'all tonight?
Yay, us.
Yay, we are on the grid.
Yes, greetings programs.
Greetings programs indeed. So if you have not been watching or listening to what we have been talking about lately, we are going to be talking about none other than the movie Tron.
Well, more specifically for this, the entire Tron franchise.
Yes. So Kyle, what was your first reaction by seeing Tron? Or let's go with Tron first.
Okay, well, the original Tron I know came out in 1982. I saw it in the theater, and I just remember being so, at that age, I was about 7 at the time Tron came out, just being so blown away, going, I want to be in this computer world. I'm dying to be into this computer world. There was nothing like it that I had ever seen before, and I don't know about you guys, but I immediately came walking out of Tron. First thing I did was go home and pick up a Frisbee because it was time to throw the disc. and my bicycle instantly became a light cycle.
You know what? I am in the same boat with you. I got one of those Robies, the ones that you could just fly forever. I got one of those. And yes, my bicycle was yellow and blue. So I was Tron for sure.
What about you, Kevin?
So Kevin, what about you, Kevin?
Oh, man, I'm excited about this. So we're going to cover all of the Tron stuff, right? We're going to cover Tron, Tron Legacy, the cartoon series. We're going to cover the toys. I'm really excited about this. Man, okay, I got to tell you. Now, a week before Tron came out, I was high on Megaforce because that came out a week before Tron did. And then when Tron came out, of course, we were treated to a lot of really good trailers, the Tron video games, and seeing the Tron toys, and I saw it in the theater, and man, I got to tell you, what really captivated me also was the video game, but me seeing those special effects at that time were mind-blowing. I'd never seen anything like that before, and then eventually seeing those translated in the video game that we would, the coin-operated stand-up cabinet game, and just enjoying the toys and the light cycles with the rip cords. Oh man, it's and the music too. And one of the things that really stuck out with me was eventually going down to Disneyland, and they had the People Mover machine that took you through Tomorrowland, and when it went inside, it took you through Tron Land, and there was a section where you would go through and you would see the light cycles going past you, and that was, oh man, it was great. And of course, they had the great video game arcade down there near Tomorrowland. I think it's near where Captain EO used to be. And now there's, I think it's now retail space, but they had several Tron games down there at the time. And I was living Tron world for a very long time. And it is a very fond memory of my 80s childhood.
Absolutely. I loved it as well. And I know I went on to Box Office Mojo just to see what was the competition during that weekend. And do you happen to know what the number one movie was that weekend, per se?
I know it wasn't Megaforce.
But it's number one in our hearts. Let's don't forget that. Number one movie of that weekend was E.T., The Extraterrestrial.
Oh, right.
Number two was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Number three was Young Doctors in Love. And finally, number four was Tron.
Wow. What a great lineup of movies to escape with when you were a kid. You believe that? E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Tron.
Oh, come
and
on.
Mega Force.
I was first in line for Young Doctors in Love now. Come on.
What is that movie?
Liar. I have no idea.
Liar.
So also, just
that
just
was my tank girl this. Lie detector right there.
but also think about this. During that weekend, there was also Rocky III, Firefox, Star Trek II, and Blade Runner, and The Thing was all happening during this time. How cool was that to see all those different movies?
What competition. Wow.
Yeah. So, of course, we all know E.T. won, you know, big time. But Tron, you know, $3 million that first weekend in the 80s, I think that was pretty decent.
Wow. What a week for movies.
Yeah. Well, I know when I was doing research for this, the budget for the original Tron was $17 million, and it actually finished with a gross of $33 million. So not a bad turnaround for such a heavy visual effects film.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you even think about it, they had some pretty, even today's standards, they had some well-known actors in there as well at that time. So being able to come out with a $33 million as a profit, I mean, that's pretty good, I would say.
Yeah. Well, another thing I find interesting about Tron when I was researching this was the fact, you look at the director of the original Tron film, Steven Lisberger, he only has 6 directing credits to his name on IMDb, and probably the largest outside of Tron was an animated film called Animal Olympics. And I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with that. I remember it got a lot of run on HBO in the early 80s.
Never saw that.
Nope.
It was a little strange, but no, I just remember, I think the thing I remember more about Tron than anything was actually when, besides the video game and all that stuff, but the actual movie itself, was how hard it was to find on VHS when it first came out on VHS. You could never rent it. It was always checked out. And it was like the video places only got like one copy.
Are you telling me that Alaska only had one VHS copy of Tron?
What is this, next to St. Olaf?
This might have been the whole state. But no, but the thing I remember about it was we had some friends of the family who owned a sporting goods store next to a video store, and they got me a copy of Tron through that video store and gave it to me for Christmas that year. So I had the clamshell VHS of Tron that I played so many times, the tape finally broke.
Wow. So, you know, we talk about the movie itself. So let's talk a little bit about the cast. How many people? All right, let me ask y'all this first. Before we start with the cast, I got to ask. Did you want to be Tron or Flynn? Kyle, you go first.
Ooh, this is tough, but I think I would have rather been Flynn because then I would have been able to own that sweet video arcade.
Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, I'm Flynn all the way because going to arcades was the thing to do during this time. That's where we spent our time. And, you know, being able to... being able to be like a big smart computer geek too on top of that and know how to do all this and get into it, definitely Flynn. Flynn was cool, and Jeff Bridges is awesome. So yeah, I was all about Flynn.
Well, Jeff Bridges is, you know, the dude. So I mean, you can't go wrong with that for sure. But I wanted to be Tron. I always just thought he was just so cool. He was just I thought he was the hero of the story. You know, he was the one that was the savior that came in and just took out everything. So I wanted to be Tron. Of course, I also like Bruce Boxleitner. So, I mean, that was also a plus for me too. So,
oh, come on. We know the truth, Davis. You just wanted to kiss Yori. That's true.
Well, Cindy Morgan, I will say, I met her back in 2011 at MegaCon, and for her, you know, she's still a very beautiful woman. She lives here in Florida somewhere.
At the end of Tron, when she's dressed in that little white outfit and Flynn is landing his helicopter, I'm like, man, she's really cute.
She is. She still is very, very cute. So, hey, you know. So, you know, we talk about Jeff Bridges, you know. David Warner, what'd y'all think about him as the ultimate bad guy?
I thought he was the highlight of the film. He was a highlight.
I think it's his voice. What do you think?
It's more than his voice. He's got this look and stare. And there's that famous Star Trek Next Generation episode that he in where he's playing the Cardassian and he's basically torturing Captain Picard. Says, "How many lights do you see?" It was Gul Madred, I think, is the character he played.
There and are then, four lights.
No. You gotta say it right. There are four lights. and David, he was also in was it Star Trek: The Final Frontier as well? He played one of the characters there. He's got this mean look about him that is so striking, and he's a great actor. And he was born in England, and so I'm sure he's had a lot of stage acting as well. But I love David. I love David Warren. He was great.
Well, one of the things too with him was I had actually forgotten, it had been a while since I've watched on, that I forgot he had actually done the voice of the MCP itself.
Yeah. Master Control Program.
And
I loved it, by the way. I loved his name in the real world, Ed Dillinger. Just love that. That was a
That sounds like a slime ball business guy right there.
he also was Chancellor Gorkon in Star Trek VI.
I think I got the movie wrong. Yeah, you're
right. No. He was actually in Star Trek V as well as a human ambassador known as St. John Talbot.
Oh, thank you. Yep. Okay.
But he's also now on Big Finish's audio productions has the Unbound Doctor.
Oh, very cool.
I don't know if y'all have listened to any of those. I've listened to a couple of segments so far, and it's actually pretty cool with the voice has the Doctor. So it's very, very cool. So, so Cindy Morgan, we loved her, of course. And then we had Dan Shore. Who remembers Dan Shore?
He was Ram, right?
Yes.
Wow.
What I love too is on IMDb, he's credited because in Tron, every character was in the real world, was in the game. He's credited as Popcorn Coworker.
He was Billy the Kid
in
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I was wondering if anyone else was going to catch
that. That's right. I forgot about that too. Okay. Yeah.
Because I know he was and he's done a few other things, but I don't know. I can't remember what he's doing right now. I know on Mark Who 42, they actually had an interview with him and what he was doing these days and everything, and how he was Billy the Kid. And the first time he did it, the way he was acting out was somebody who had syphilis, because that's what Billy the Kid had. And they're like, no, don't act like that. It was something along those lines. So, all right. So, well, then we also looked at who remembers Bernard Hughes as Dumont.
I remember the thing about him was his voice. There was just something about his voice that just grabbed you, pulled you in.
Why does that name sound familiar? He was Grandpa in Lost Boys. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember that now. Yeah. But of course, we can't leave out one of the other characters in here because it has a Babylon 5. That's Peter Jurassic, who played Crom. Of course, he is better known on Babylon 5 for playing Londo. So that's for you, Norm.
now wait, guys, though, we're neglecting the true star of the true star of Tron.
Bit. Bruce Boxleitner?
No. Bit. Yes. No. Yes. No. Yes. No.
Can you say anything other than yes or no?
Yes.
We got to talk about Bruce Boxleitner, though. I mean, he is the Tron.
Yeah. Without him, there was none of this.
Yeah. And of course, also, Babylon 5 is Captain John Sheridan. You're welcome, Norm.
A lot of connection between B5 and Tron.
And of course, star of Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yes. And he was also on, for all of our Western fans out there, he was also on The Gambler.
Yeah. Okay.
So now I want to bring up a point about this, because in Tron, Bruce Boxleitner's character, Alan Bradley, is kind of that, almost has that kind of classic 80s nerdy guy look with the glasses and the corduroy jacket with the patches on the sleeves and stuff. Yet, because he writes the Tron program, Tron is the ultimate warrior on the You think there was a little wish fulfillment with that program writing?
Well, think about it. If you're writing a program and it's going to have a lead character to it or anything, do you want to be the janitor, or do you want to be the number one football player quarterback, you know?
Yeah.
Come on. You know, but he's done quite a bit of not only work for Tron, but he's also done voiceover work. And I know he's actually been in NCIS for a couple episodes, and he was actually in, various video games, everything. Cause I know he was in Tron Uprising too, right?
Yes. He voiced Tron in Tron Uprising.
So, I mean, of course, you know, everyone else remembers him as, you know, Sheridan from Babylon 5, of course. So, you know, let's look at, since we've looked at all the actors of the cast and everything, let's look at the plot of the story. The first Tron film showed us the inside the computers in a very visually stunning way and was celebrated for its unique look. A look that was so unique that, in fact, the Academy Awards would not nominate it for the best visual effects, because they thought at the time it was using the computer was cheating. What do you think about that?
if they could only look forward to the future.
and
also look at the sequel.
Well, here's another interesting little trivia about that. A lot of Disney animators refused to work on Tron because they were afraid they were just writing their own death sentence with jobs by working on computers, by helping with this computer animation at Disney. Little they know, about 22 years later, they would actually close the hand-drawn animation studio at Disney it was about 10, 15 years before John Lasseter insisted it be reopened.
Yeah, it was. That was, I think the last, correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the last movies was like Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah,
hand-drawn. I remember, I think it was actually here in Florida when the animation studios was here in Florida and everything, so. So, you know, we've talked about the video games. They had the light cycles. How many people had such a hard time driving a light cycle on the video game?
Well, it's funny, was there was a book that came out that was kind of a user manual cheat guide for this game. And it went up to like 8 to 10 levels of this game, and it told you how to beat it. And I had a tough time beating the light cycle and the tank scene, the tank part two. But what was cool about the light cycles was this book that you got, or the magazine or whatever it was, it showed you how to do it by showing you what to do and what pattern to take your light cycle to where you could kill the other three, or the it starts off with one and then it goes to three. So after I kind of memorized those, I was able to do it without the book and kind of improvise and do it. But, there's different way, like when the cone comes down, there's several different ways to do that. I remember you would hold the yoke, the joystick, and then you would tap it with your finger real fast, you know, to make it shoot faster. And there were certain tricks to do by when you defeated the tanks to bounce your pulse gun or whatever it is and then you would hide in the little center spot a little bit right before it would displace you somewhere else. And it was a great game. It was one of those things that really, really took you into the movie and made you kind of relive the movie. And it was done so well. And the music was great, and the way it lit up too. And it still is one of my favorite games. And when last year, when I went to the, Kentucky, it was that gaming convention that I went to, where you can go play the old pinball games and the old arcade coin operated games here in Atlanta, and they were all free to play, and there was a line to play Tron. It was the one of few games that had a line to play Tron. So, yeah.
Well, And a lot of people forget there was actually a second stand-up arcade game that was, it didn't get as big of a nationwide push as the original Tron system, but Discs of Tron, which was based off the Hi-Li style game that was played between Flynn and Crom in the film. And what ended up happening with that was it was years later they actually imported that game and brought it to the Xbox 360 as part of the Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, I tried to play the Tron on some of the Xbox 360 Arcade, and I failed miserably. I don't know how y'all did it or not, but I could not catch on to it. I mean, I was like, I need just a single joystick and a button.
I tried playing the Tron Evolution Xbox 360 game. I still have it right here. That thing is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and let's go back to the original Tron, because you also had, at the time, the two big arcade system, or home arcade video game systems were the Atari 2600 and the Intellivision. And there was Adventures of Tron for the Atari 2600, which really didn't get a lot of notoriety. It was actually made by Mattel. However, there was two for the Intellivision system. Tron Solar Sailor, which really wasn't that popular. However, Tron Deadly Discs, which was basically disc fighting in very bad 8 pixels. But, you know, I think most of us did our deadly discs in the backyard throwing frisbees at each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's so funny, too, because I remember watching last year the Goldbergs episode where he does the Tron stuff. And I don't remember any kid making their bike look as cool as he did and his outfit as cool as he did. And we have to show love to the Tron guy several years ago that made it famous on the internet. Do you remember this guy?
Yes.
He made his own light up Tron suit.
Yes. He kept Tron alive.
Yeah, he kept Tron alive. And I remember he got on the talk show circuit because, you know, he was kind of a nerdy looking guy and he was a little overweight. And, but people loved him because his goal and one of his main goals was to make an actual light up Tron suit. And he did a really darn good job of it.
Well, you speak of the Tron suits, and that reminds me to another fun kind of, it's true, but it's almost become like an urban legend because so many people laugh about it. If you remember in the film, Flynn had to wear like this vest. There was a reason Jeff Bridges had to wear
a tunic or something. Yeah. Was it like a tunic or something? Yeah. Why was there a reason for that?
Let's just say Jeff Bridges' endowment caused problems with the costume. It was a little tight and there was a noticeable bump.
Are you saying he had a large unit?
That's one way of putting it.
Let's keep it family friendly, folks. Yeah.
The program was well written.
Well, good night, folks. This is a good episode.
Well, if you're going to write a program, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, you know, like we talked about earlier, you want to be the quarterback. So we talked about the video game, which, by the way, I do have a video game size for my action figures as well. So that's actually a really cool little Dio piece and everything. But let's talk about the merchandise. How many people owned those four action figures that were plastic see-through and had a disc with them?
I had three of the four. I never had a Sark.
Really? I had Flynn, Sark, and Tron, but I never had a Warrior.
I had them all. I did. And I remember I had three Warriors. And I do remember the Sark was a little tough to find, but this is where I need your help with, because I only had two of the light cycles, but apparently there was three. I had the yellow and I had the red, but I think there was a blue one too.
They never put out a blue light cycle toy, if my understanding was, because everything I looked at, they said there was red and yellow, but I never heard anything about
blue. I've seen pictures of them though.
So there has been, and I'll tell you why. There was a red and yellow when we were all young lads, and a blue one was released for the 20th anniversary in 2002.
Ah.
And I was at, what was the name of that store? Suncoast. Suncoast. And they actually had all the Tron merchandise in 2002. And I only had a yellow cycle. I don't know what the colors y'all had or anything, but that was the only one I had. And I saw it had a red cycle there, and I was like, oh, I'll pick up this. And I'll go, oh, there's a blue one. I'll get it later. Yeah, never could find it later.
Oh, man.
Moral of this story, buy it right then and there.
Yeah, I seem to remember. I don't remember the blue one, but I remember the merchandising of that coming out. I wish I would have got those. Because those figures, as much as they did not have, they lacked in articulation, they looked really cool. They had that kind of see-through color plastic, and their weapons and discs glowed in the dark. And those cycles, man, talk about a toy that really looked like what you saw in the movie. And they had that little ripcord thing that allowed you to pull it. And what a fantastic design. I still wish I had my original toys. For Tron Legacy, I did buy the white one from there and kept that one, and also the little four car rover thing that they have too. But yeah, those are just fantastic toys. And you know, sometimes I know they were re-released too, I believe. You know, there's just those things hold a special place in my heart because they just look so cool. I only wish that they had made more figures. I would love to have seen the version the girl figure. You know, I would love to have seen just more variety of the characters. That would have been cool.
That would have been cool. I mean, how many of us, you can go ahead and admit it, use their G.I. Joe figures for the light cycles?
Busted.
Yeah, that was me too. Yeah, I did that.
That experimental G.I. Joe vehicle.
That's right. Cobra's trying to steal the new Joe cycle. I may have put Rock and Roll, taking him off the RAM and put him inside the light cycle.
And that's the only way to do it, right? So I actually had did some research on that, and they actually had in Japan. It's a series called Media. It's from a company called Mediacom, but it was a Kubrick series, and it had like four different box sets of Tron, and it had like the tank in one set, a recognizer, a light cycle, and some of the figures, and even an MCP with that. But however, those things are about $50 a pop now, yeah, the way they are, the way they look and everything. And there was something floating around. I don't know if it was a prototype, but when we were going through the when we were making the show notes and everything, there was a green light cycle. I don't know if it was a prototype or if it was just let's just see what it looks like, or if it was a knockoff or whatever, but there was an image of a green light cycle. So I thought that was actually kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Tron is, too, Tron was kind of one of those movies, while it wasn't a huge hit, it always managed to stay within the Disney lexicon. And it developed a cult following on VHS because of the visuals of it. And, guys, I got to ask, would this be the longest time ever between sequels, between 1982 when Tron came out and in 2010 when Disney put out Tron Legacy?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else that's taken so long.
Well,
so eagerly awaited, too.
Technically, Episode 6 came out in 1983, and Episode 7 didn't come out till 2015.
No, that's... We had prequels. Nice try, Grayson. Nice try.
I couldn't resist that one. I mean, come on, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those things, because we even see in Tron Legacy a little insert of a storybook called The Black Hole.
Yeah.
You know?
So my question is then, because I know when they announced Tron Legacy in 2009, because they started the hype pretty early on Tron Legacy, how excited were you guys? Because I was through the roof.
I know I was. I was really, really excited, especially knowing what, you know, Jeff Bridges was announced that he was coming back. And I knowing that where special effects have evolved since then, I was really curious about the look of it and how they were going to incorporate that and what the world was going to evolve into. And it was nice that we got the son of Flynn wondering where his father was. And so I was really, really excited. I love the cast that they had as well. And of course they got Bruce Boxleitner back too.
I gotta admit, I loved it too. When I first heard about this, I'm going, it's not a reboot, so that's one good thing, but it's actually a sequel. And I really wanted to see what was going on, because there was even a time, I think there was some type of negotiations or something happening with Disney and Lego. And, you know, we eventually now got the castle, but somebody had mentioned something about Tron Legos and whatnot. And I was like, oh, this would be cool to see. And of course, you know, that's just, we just never saw that or anything. But at the same time, I mean, I really wanted to see War of the Light Cycles. I really wanted to see the merchandise. And, you know, I don't know if y'all saw like all the figures or everything, because a lot of it was sporadically put out, because there was, you know, the recognizers, then the recognizer case. And then there was the three-man jet. Did y'all ever see that for the action figures?
The three-man jet? No.
No. Yeah.
It's about, I don't know, probably about 15 inches long, and it looks just like the jet that they had, but and it only has, it holds three of them, but the one in the back actually has the laser cannons to it and everything. Oh, wow. It's actually a pretty cool little design of a jet and everything, but you know, it was just one of those things where I wanted to actually see some really cool stuff come from it, and I loved it. It just the fact that we actually see, you know, Tron, or do we?
Yeah. Well, let's get into that, because I'm going to steal your thunder here a little bit, Davis. Because in my opinion, Tron Legacy might be the most beautiful visual movie I have ever seen.
I would agree with you there, Kyle. Yeah, it really carries the film for me, even though it still gets kind of knocked around, and people think that it's not as good as it should be. Visually, it's stunning. I love the story. What about you, Davis?
You know what? I thought it was really good. And I think that actually helped create the segue to create Tarkin for Rogue One.
Yeah,
let's
talk about the plot of Tron Legacy, because Tron establishes itself. It's probably been about 20 years even in the timeline from the end of the original Tron. Kevin Flynn has taken over Incom. They've kind of portrayed him as a Bill Gates type, except they're throwing in a little bit of the touch of the dude in with Kevin Flynn in this film, with how he approaches things, his thoughts about things. Obviously, being able to go to the grid gives you a different perspective. But we start off the film, and Kevin Flynn has been missing for years, and the focus is on his son Sam, who has become a kind of a activist in his own unique way, shall we say. As the movie opens up with him putting out the latest version of Encom Windows, shall we say, out for to everybody for free, which, you know, kind of upsets the board of Encom, except for one Alan Bradley, who is still there, still kind of running things.
Bruce Boxleitner's character.
Correct. But some great throwbacks too was we get introduced to Dillinger's son in this early on too. So they're still throwing a lot of tiebacks to the original Tron. But what's funny is things happen, and Sam finds his way to Flynn's arcade, which is still intact, with all those amazing video games in it after all these years and being shut down. How mind-blowing and how great was that scene when Sam first walks into Flynn's arcade?
Yeah.
I loved it.
I loved all the sounds that you heard too. Like you hear the sound of Donkey Kong going on, and just all these great sound bites.
And the perfect song coming out of the jukebox.
Yeah. What song was that?
It was Journey.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The thing that's interesting about this plot too, that what it reminded me of too, was the Dark Knight trilogy recently, the Christopher Nolan ones, where in the first one, is where Bruce kind of leaves for a while, even though he owns all of Wayne, but the board is kind of running it. Same thing kind of happens here. Garrett Hedlund, who plays Sam Flynn, his character is kind of, you know, even though he has a majority of the shares, he's kind of gone on and done his own thing with his activist roles and such. But then he kind of comes back into the fold later on, which is interesting. And of course, the beautiful Olivia Wilde plays Cora.
She never looked better than how she looked in this film.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, of course, Michael Sheen plays Castor. Love Michael Sheen. Of course, if you're a fan of the Underworld films and recently Passengers, he played the bartender robot. Great, great character actor, too. And then, of course, we have to mention, and they're in the movie as well, as Daft Punk has a small role in the movie and just did a great job with the soundtrack. There's a lot of people that say I prefer the Tron soundtrack over the actual movie itself, the Legacy movie.
Yeah.
But I love them both. I think they're great. And that's one of the things that is a huge highlight in this film is the soundtrack.
Well, and you know,
go ahead. No, go ahead, Davis.
No, I was just going to say, you know, with Tron Legacy, I don't know if y'all caught on to a couple of things, but there was a lot of media tie-in to Tron Legacy as well. There was a book, like a graphic novel that was released before the movie that talked about what happens to Tron and how Flynn is there and everything. It's called Tron. I don't remember what the name of it is. It was before Uprising, how that happened and everything. And then it was just like another story. Then you had, like, of course, the soundtrack, the merchandise. I mean, just everything about it. I mean, even I think at Disneyland, there was some type of party night that I saw that was going on happening there and everything. So, I mean, it was a lot of synergy that was going on that was actually really, really cool. And even now, I don't know if y'all know this, but over in Shanghai Disneyland, there is a Tron Light Cycle coaster.
Oh, I would love to do that, man.
I've seen the video.
Yeah.
Oh, how awesome is that?
Oh, gosh, I wish they would bring that over here. One thing I did want to give Legacy credit for as well is the costumes. Their version of the Tron costumes with the light up thing. I love how the designs on everyone's suits of the unique characters have a different type of pattern on them. And the cloak that Jeff Bridges, Kevin Flynn wears, that's got that long cloak in the hood. And then, of course, Clue, the character he plays as well. The costumes are just fantastic, and they pop. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and I got to mention it, is when Sam Flynn shows up, and he's getting undressed and then dressed by the four Tron robotic women. one of whom helps him. Her name is Jem, played by Bo Garrett. Just stunning-looking actress in those costumes and the way they have that little robotic walk. That's kind of hot. Yeah.
Now
it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, a point I want to bring up to you, too, with this is, guys, when we go back to the first time, remember one of the things with the first time, as far as the visuals go, were the colors. And that continues in Legacy. Because here you've got basically the forces of Clues in these either like really vibrant reds or like almost like an orange, gold, yellow color.
Yep.
While you've got Sam in that blue kind of color, or even a white for some of them. And of course you have the ISOs, which is what Olivia Wilde's character of Cora was, and Jeff Bridges with that white. And I mean, you just add that to the incredible costume designs they already had. It was an absolutely perfect mix.
Yeah. Agreed.
But
just beautiful looking film. Just great. Yeah.
One of the things, too, I want to bring up with this film, because there's two things. One is the elephant in the room, which we're going to get to next. But one of the big things that always stood out to me, and it was a small scene, but it just spoke a lot about how much they were developing the world of Tron and developing differences between programs and what users meant to programs. The scene in the Discourse when Sam Flynn gets cut and drips blood.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, user. And just you could almost see like this just... like what's going on feel from the entire film at that point.
you know, what's funny is before this movie came out, the Tron Legacy, when you just set up a new Blu-ray player with your HD cable into your HD TV, you want to play something to make sure it looks right. And before Tron Legacy came out, the one movie I would always put in would be Mila Jovovich's Ultraviolet.
Yeah.
Because of the way that movie, because the movie itself isn't great, but visually it's fantastic. But now since Tron Legacy's come out, if I rehook something up or hook up a new TV or Blu-ray, I always throw in Tron Legacy to see it pops.
That's cool. Hey, and you know, I also forgot, I don't know if y'all remember this or not, but in 2010, you know how we recently did a Black Hole Vincent with commentary and retrospective.
Yeah.
There was a statue that was released of Vincent. It's about 6 inches tall that was done grid colors.
Oh,
so
wow.
We had like the blues, the dark blues, light blues all together. I mean,
Vincent was Tron'd out.
Yes. It was absolutely stunning. It sold out before I could get to it.
In 2010, pretty much everything in Disney was Tron'd out, but we're going to get to in a second. But guys, let's hit what was kind of the elephant in the room when it comes to Tron Legacy, and that is obviously Jeff Bridges' Clue, because that was the start of really using digital technology to bring somebody in. In this case, it was Jeff Bridges, a young Jeff Bridges. And a lot of people were kind of thrown by that. I thought it was amazing.
At the time.
Yeah, at the time. You look at now, when Davis brought it up, looking at Rogue One, what they did with Tarkin and Rogue One, you see the comparison. But, I mean, that's groundbreaking in Hollywood at that point.
Yeah, you know, it is the elephant in the room because it doesn't look quite right. But for the technology at the time, it was a huge leap. And as you see where then they went from there, you saw the young Michael Douglas in Ant-Man, which was fantastic. That's when you knew that, okay, this can be done. And then it was perfected with Rogue One, with Tarkin, and of course, the young Leia as well. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things when you watch this, you just got to kind of roll with it. You know, it's not perfect, but it does what it needs to do. It gives you the image of Clue and a younger Jeff Bridges, and it had to be done.
What about you, Davis?
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, when you see Jeff Bridges has a younger version of himself, and then you see the older version of him as well. I mean, it was really cool to see, but you could tell that it was still in its infant stages. And it's funny now, you know, you look at actually Rogue One, it was just released, and you see Tarkin the way he was presented. It just looked amazing to me. I mean, it looked like there was a real person there. I mean, in my aspect and everything, I thought it was actually really, really cool. I mean, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah. Well, now let's get to the sad part of Tron Legacy, which was, I don't remember Disney pouring this much marketing into a film in a very long time. The estimated budget to make Tron Legacy was $170 million when you add in all
I think it escalated even more with all of the marketing behind it.
Yeah,
yeah.
The marketing, at least another $100 million in marketing. The film only grossed in the box office roughly $172 million. So Disney took a bath on Tron 2. However, there was a lot of things that came out of Tron 2 in Tron Legacy that to this day are still used. I mean, we were just talking about what they did with Clue and that technology. We talked a little earlier, the soundtrack that came out of Tron Legacy. Daft Punk was already on a roll, and they just continued it with Tron Legacy. In fact, the soundtrack was so popular and sold so well, they actually brought Daft Punk back with other techno artists and did a whole remix album of the Tron Legacy soundtrack. And a lot of the marketing actually did sell fairly well. But guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't remember Disney ever putting the kind of marketing on this film like they did with Tron Legacy.
I can't either. I mean, it was, and you know, the thing about it is it was actually really cool, but at the same time, you know, they brought back, you know, like you said, Daft Punk to do a second soundtrack. but it, I don't know. Do you think that there was just something missing, that it had been much too long for people coming into, you know, now going, I don't understand what's going on here? Do you think that there could have been something that could have been like a small plot line or a small story element that would have actually helped move the story along to make it better for, you know, somebody who had never seen the original one and going, oh, this is an amazing movie? Or
they should have done a limited theatrical release of Tron, or maybe another special edition or something on video. But yeah, I think you're right. There was the gap there, and you know, we have the set Tron fans like us, you know, but I don't know if it just didn't turn people on, and then the word of mouth didn't help it. But I, you know, it was one of those things where I loved it. I thought it was great. And when I heard people say, it didn't do it for me. And I'm still kind of surprised by it, because it gave me everything I wanted. Great interpretation of what would happen 20 years later. I love the casting. You had returning cast members. I love the new look of the light cycles. I love this movie. And so I can't speak for everyone else, but it just didn't quite sit with, I guess, the audience members to keep recommending it, I guess.
Well,
I do. Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
Well, no, I was just going to say, for me, I mean, I agree with Kevin wholeheartedly. I this is a favorite movie of mine. However, I can see where some people, the general public, could have some issues with this film. And from some of the things I've read, a lot of people felt Jeff Bridges kind of maybe mailed in his performance and just kind of did a digital version of the dude. And a lot of people thought Garrett Hudlin came across a little flat in this film. And trying to be objective about it, I can see that a little bit. But I think the critics are much too harsh on this film. This film, again, like the original Tron, technologically it was advanced. The visuals were outstanding. Yes, the story might not have been the best written story everywhere, but it was solid and it did what it needed to do. And I mean, this is eye candy.
Yeah, maybe if there was one weakness, maybe it is the writing to a certain degree. Because I did want to defend Garrett Hedlund. I think he's a great actor. He did great role in a movie called Country Strong, where he plays a young country artist, and he actually sings and plays in that movie. He was also in one of my favorite films called Four Brothers with Mark Wahlberg. So he's a great actor, but maybe the writing had something to do with it. Maybe that was the reason.
I still think that, like what you just said, Kevin, if they would have done a theatrical release to Tron, I think it may have gone over a little bit better. Because if you look now, like all the Marvel movies that we have been seeing, they've been doing like certain Marvel movies where they lead up to whatever the next movie is.
Yeah, they do the marathons. Yeah, exactly.
I think that would have actually done well. I mean, I know just from my own point of view, seeing all the merchandise, there was so much merchandise. And
yeah,
like what you said with Tron Legacy, that first time you see an updated recognizer, I mean, how cool was it to see that thing, and then just shine the spotlight down on.
Oh, is that the ship with the two legs?
Yeah.
I love the new interpretation of that ship. That's cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was one more thing that Disney did with all of their big Tron hype, and it's a show as far as animated go, and especially with when I consider U.S. animated shows, I absolutely love this show, and that was Disney in May 18, 2012. Disney debuted Tron Uprising on Disney XD. It lasted about 18 episodes and was pulled off the air on January 28th, 2013. The animation style for Tron Legacy was fairly unique and not anything they had really done before. It was kind of a experiment thing, and a lot of people really liked it. But the big thing about Tron Legacy was actually the voice cast they brought in. I mean, this is a pretty solid voice cast, guys. First of all, did either of you watch Tron Uprising?
I never saw it.
You didn't see it? Okay.
No, never
I did actually. But the problem with it was the sporadic times that it was on, it didn't seem to be on it. Like, they would show it like a little bit at one time, and then it would move to a different time, or it was tough to find it. And I remember trying to set my DVR at it with it, and I don't know. I don't think they showed it all at once at the time as well. But I thought it was great. But yeah, we should definitely touch on the cast. The cast is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason why I think Tron Uprising never got a fair shake too is because it did come out in 2012. Disney had already kind of burned through the legacy issue and realized what they had. So I don't think they ever gave Tron Uprising a fair shot. And that, so that it got, why it got moved around stuff. But let's talk about the cast. We had our lead character, Beck, who was voiced by Elijah Wood. And he was a mechanic in this world of Tron who decided to take up against Clue, who was trying to take over the grid and create the perfect system. And he is actually found by Tron and is trained by Tron and actually takes over the mantle of Tron as the series progresses. And of course, Tron, and here was the big thing, they were able to bring Bruce Boxleitner back to voice Tron in this series. So you had that, which was a huge plus in the column. But then you look at some of the other characters. You had a female character, Mara, who was voiced by Mandy Moore. You had Zed, who was voiced by Nate Cordy. You had General Tesler, who was your main villain of the series, voiced by the one and only Lance Hendrickson.
Of course, you had Trisha Helfer as the grid as well.
Yes, yes. But you also had a character, Paige, voiced by Emmanuelle Chikri, who probably most famous for playing Sloan on Entourage.
Oh, she's so pretty.
Oh, she's gorgeous. you had Abel, who was voiced by Reginald Vell Johnson from not only Family Matters fame, but Die Hard fame.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And Paul Reubens was in there, too.
Yeah, you had Pavel, who was voiced by Paul Reubens. Now, but I mean, and that was just your main cast right there. Here are some of the people who guest voiced on this series. You had Fred Tatasciore, who voiced Clue on his appearances. You had a character named Dyson, who was voiced by John Glover, who most of you will probably remember playing Lex Luthor's father in Smallville. You had Peril, who was voiced by Kate Mara. Cyrus, voiced by Breaking Bad's Aaron Paul. You had a character by the name of Keller, who was voiced by Marcia Gay Harden. And then you had, this is for you, Kevin, Cutler, who was voiced by John Wick's own Lance Reddick.
Nice, very nice. Sharon from Wick.
Yep. Olivia Wilde actually came back for an episode and voiced her character of Quora. David Arquette.
Yeah, they really got the cast for that.
Yeah, David Arquette voiced a character by the name of Link, who may have had a couple of episodes, and then another character by the name of Gorn, voiced by Catherine Hunter. This show had the writing. We were talking about the writing on Legacy. If Legacy would have had the writing of Uprising, I think Legacy would have done bonkers in the box office, guys.
So Uprising takes place before Legacy.
Correct. Uprising takes place, if you go by the timeline that they establish in Legacy, what the speculation is that when you see in Legacy where Tron gets captured by Clue, that at some point Tron actually escaped from Clue and was in hiding. So it was assumed that Tron was recaptured by Clue. However, there is theories out because of the character Beck taking up the mantle of Tron, that possibly it was the Beck character who was Tron in Tron Legacy that had been captured and turned into Reznor by Clue in Tron Legacy. And that's the Tron you see falling into the water for his apparent demise in Tron Legacy. So there has been some of that speculation. Huh. The disappointing thing about Tron Legacy, it was cut on a cliffhanger. This final episode was a cliffhanger. There was a very large movement online to get Legacy back to at least a movie to finish the series, but Disney just stood their ground on it and just would not budge on doing more with Legacy, with Uprising, which is a shame because it was a great show.
I'm having trouble finding Tron Uprising on on home video. You can buy it, I think, on Amazon digitally, but having a hard copy, I don't know if you can find them.
No, they never did release it on hard copy. You can find it on Amazon, and I own it all on iTunes.
Right.
And I will tell anybody, it's worth the buy. It's a beautiful series. It's well written, great action sequences. It has all the feel of Tron Legacy as far as the designs, the vehicles, everything like that. It's solid. But guys, we need to discuss the elephant in the room, because
another one.
I think there is another one.
Well, yes. Tron has a lot of elephants. Let's put it that way. But this this news actually broke yesterday. It started leaking out yesterday before we decided to do this podcast. Was there are rumors now floating out of Disney headquarters that they are working on Tron 3. Tron 3 has been basically in a frozen development because of everything that's going on. But there seems to be maybe a little movement with Jared Leto attached of doing a new Tron film that really takes place further in the future of Tron, I'm guessing, because it's not going to tie into... There will obviously be things that will carry over, but it's not really going to tie into Legacy or the original Tron, but it's going to be in the world of Tron. So what are your thoughts on that? Kevin, I know you had a few.
Yeah, this is one of those suspicious links that we see coming across our Facebook feeds and entertainment news channels, whatever ones that you like to follow. And I think this is one of those, it's one of two things. It's either something that is released officially by Disney, but yet unofficially to kind of fish the reaction out of fans and how they would feel about whether two things, whether they want to see a reboot or they would rather see a sequel to Tron Legacy, which was originally in the works, and to kind of gauge whether or not it's worth taking a risk on. The other thing, too, is it could be someone else's wish list and putting it out there as major clickbait to kind of see what type of, you know, revenue they can get out of it. So unless Tron, you know, because when you see these things, they say, oh, there's a rumor this, rumor that. It could be officially but yet unofficial done by, you know, the studio to see where they can go with it. Because I don't think they want to bury Tron. I think they want to do something with it. And I think that they should. As for Jared Leto, who is attached to this rumor mill, I think he's a good actor. He has an Oscar. He's great. I thought he was awesome as the Joker in Suicide Squad. I would rather see a sequel to Legacy and to kind of round out the trilogy. I wish they would go forward with that. If they do a reboot... I would be fine with that too, and I'm kind of impartial to Jared Leto personally. I know what about you, Davis?
I'm not going to believe or hear anything until I actually hear it directly from Disney themselves. It says we are planning on releasing this at this time. I mean, like you said, it could be a clickbait. It could be something. Could be something that Jared Leto has been wanting to do for many, many years, and said, "Hey, I want to be in a Tron movie," you know? I mean, it could be something like that, but I just don't see, until it's official, I want to see it in writing saying, yes, there is going to be a Tron movie, whatever it is. I mean, but right now, like you said, it's all pure speculation and rumors of rumors and whatnot. So, you know, and like you said, I think he did a really good job as the Joker. I loved him in Suicide Squad. So, I'd be interested to see it. I mean, I don't have any qualms about it. I gotta admit though, I still would love to see a remake of The Black Hole though, before Tron Tron 3.
I would love that too. That would be great.
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing with Tron is it's even goes back to the time between the original Tron and Tron Legacy. There's always been so many rumors and false starts and this and that. So. It's with Tron, you never quite know. Is it clickbait? Is there some legitimacy to it? So people kind of, I think more than even a Star Wars or anything like that, with Tron fans are always looking for that little nugget they can grab. Any little nugget they can grab, because that's hope that there's going to be more.
And, you know, that's well and good, because we can always hope for whatever the case may be. But at the same time, you know, I think there's just too much of that clickbait that goes around, you know, because I think there's some guy that actually comes up with a new Snoke theory like every month. There's a new one, and I just think in my mind going, just enjoy the movie, and you know,
or wait for the sequel to actually tell you who Snoke is.
Yes. or, you know, it's the same time. I mean, I think we even talked about this with Rogue One when we saw the trailer reaction. I asked a question to both of y'all. Where's Tarkin? Is he like on vacation or what? And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised seeing Tarkin on the screen. I did not know anything going into the movie except what we speculated and what we talked about in our own opinions and whatnot. So, I mean, I would love to see the grid back on the big screen. I'd love to see the end of the line club again. I would love to see the light cycles in action. But, you know, until that actually happens, until we actually see official word, it's just all pure speculation.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, we got a treat in store because coming up, we're going to do a commentary of both the original Tron and Tron Legacy here at Couch Potato Theater. But before we get to that, Davis, before we bring it into this retrospective, what's going on around the Fandom Podcast Network these days?
What's going on around the Fandom Podcast Network? Well, looks like we are going to be having Blood of Kings. Currently, they're going to be going over Highlander 3. And you know what? I've never seen that movie. Kevin, is it worth watching?
It is, because we actually did a two-parter for that's already out right now. We did it, obviously, retrospective about it. We did a commentary, but it challenged some rules of the game, which has created a lot of discussion, and it also spawned an episode that we did just recently called The Rules of the Game, where we talked about that. And also coming up, we've got the Highlander comic that just came out by IDW. We did a show on that. That will be coming out shortly. And we're about to record our first fan participation, fan pick show. We have decided we had a huge hit when it came to doing our commentaries. We had fans say, hey, can you do some commentaries on some of the episodes? We'd love to hear your take on that. And so we decided to award one of our listeners that, and we're going to be doing it again. So we're excited about that.
That's awesome. I mean, I have always enjoyed watching the Highlander, the TV show, and I've only watched like a couple of the movies. The first one, of course, and then, well, the second one, and then the one with Connor and Duncan both together. But that's cool. I can't wait to actually hear that. So for Culture Class, you're doing a weekly update for Celebration and all the Oscar updates.
You know. Oh, yes. We'll be doing a little Oscar recap because Kyle and I did a little competition. We picked 12 out of the 24 to see who would have the best. And Kyle, remind me what happened there. Remind me.
There's a bad envelope. That's what happened.
Yeah, someone was victorious and someone was not in our contest. But yeah, we'll be doing that. And of course, we just recently had the John Wick 2 reaction show on our spotlight. And of course, just came out too, we lost one of our favorite actors in fandom, Bill Paxton. And we did an awesome tribute show to him with Kyle, myself, Norman, and Aaron Gill from Australia.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, It was really cool because I was hoping to be a part of that show that night, but unfortunately things just could not work out and everything. But he was always one of my favorites. I don't know. Did y'all ever watch the TV show Big Love or?
I never did. No,
I watched a few of those episodes. It's out there. I personally didn't like it, but I just loved him as a character. I always thought he was great. One of my favorites is the, I get them confused sometimes. The Doc Holliday movie with Kurt Russell and him.
Tombstone.
Yes, as, Tombstone.
Yeah, as Morgan Earp, yeah.
Yeah, that was always great. So on Couch Potato Theater, we actually did the Black Hole retrospective and the commentary. So we had Kyle and I had a great time doing that. What do you think, Kyle? Did we have a good time?
Oh, yeah. I'm still waiting for my double blaster, Davis.
I'm still waiting on my Holy Grail Vincent figure, so hey, you know, I guess once I finally get that, I can stop collecting, right?
No, that'll never happen.
No, never. And last but certainly not least, we actually did the Time Warp. Kyle, you spearheaded the lost 80s TV shows.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. That's getting ready to come out here probably within next week as from when you're hearing this. It was great because I actually had you, I had Davis, I had Kevin, I had Norman, and I actually found TV shows that even stumped all three of you. So I was feeling pretty proud of myself under that fact.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about Tron, and you know what was one of the best short-lived TV shows? Automan.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
That was our Tron fix on TV.
Absolutely. So if anyone would like to contact us at the Phantom Podcast Network, you can get in touch with us. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. Facebook, we have the Phantom Podcast Network, a Facebook group page. Email us at phantompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at Phantom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings Pod. So check us out right there. We're also on Twitter at Phantom Network. Kyle, where can they find you on the Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at AKyleW.
Kevin, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
And you can find me on Twitter at Davis Grayson. You can find the ever popular Norman C. Lau on Twitter at Starfighter at 1701. And Matt Clifton on Twitter at Florida Fulcrum, which is actually just a cool name. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And we actually have another special guest host, which will be appearing very soon in the next episode. And, you could find him at Kessel Junkie. If you don't know who he is yet, you'll find out soon enough. So, Kyle, Kevin, do you have any last thoughts?
I just want to say it was really fun walking down memory lane with Tron. One of my favorite times in the 80s. And, you know, it's funny when you look at the original Tron now, even though the special effects don't hold up, it is still a fun movie to watch and talk about. And, you know, I remember looking back and watching it for the first time. It was ahead of its time, and no one had ever seen anything like it before. And I thought that the sequel, Tron Legacy, did a great job of updating these effects and giving it a whole new updated look. And I love watching them back to back, and I really hope that they would do another sequel to round out the trilogy.
Indeed. Kyle, what about you?
Tron is an all-time favorite. It always will be, being the computer tech guy around here that has that extra special place. But there's only one way I can end this particular podcast for myself. Gentlemen, end of line.
End of line, indeed.